to ask about Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Aaron Jasper, and he'll be answering your most important questions on Montana without the crowds. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure to sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded. We'll be available for playback on our website within about 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Aaron Jasper about Montana without the crowds. Watermaster is dedicated to providing their customers with the highest quality inflatables on the market, as well as unbeatable customer service and product support. They are best known for their signature products, the Watermaster Grizzly and Kodiak rafts. These rafts are lightweight, compact, durable, versatile, and safe. The Watermaster rafts are everything your personal watercraft should be. They have been used by anglers and hunters all over the world for over 15 years, including Dave Whitlock, one of fly fishing's greatest innovators. Dave said, "With my Watermaster, I can enjoy more fishing per hour than any other method I have ever tried. After 2.5 years of testing 15 models of kick boats, I'm convinced that Watermaster is the ultimate personal flotation craft for warm and cold water fly fishing." Visit Watermaster today and take a look at their rafts. Go to www.bigskyinflatables.com. That's www.bigskyinflatables.com. Well, before we introduce Aaron, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. There are a drawing tonight. We're going to be giving away 1-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to the Fly Fishing and Tying Journal. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Aaron's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a $25 gift certificate courtesy of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So here's how you can win that $25 gift certificate, which you can redeem either in the store or online. You have to be the first person to answer the question correctly that we ask at the end of the show. And the question will be about something we've talked about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills, and hopefully you'll win that $25 gift certificate. Tonight, our guest is Aaron Jasper. Aaron fishes an average of 200 to 250 days a year and has been fly fishing since the age of 7. Aaron has been fortunate to fish some of the greatest trout streams around the country, fishing extensively in the eastern United States as well as traveling across the country to experience some of the very best fly fishing available out west. As a result of his travels, Aaron has learned many techniques, flies, and rigs that have enabled him to constantly grow and improve as a fisherman. In recent years, thanks to his very close friend, Davy Wooten, Aaron has become a true student of many European nymphing techniques and other methods of trout fishing. Along with traditional style wet fly fishing, Aaron has become a great source of Euro nymphing knowledge. Aaron is always happy to demonstrate a variety of Euro nymphing techniques, from short leader Polish and Czech methods to longer leader Spanish and French techniques. While this style of fishing is an investment to learn, it's very unequaled in its fish catching potential. In 2007, along with his friend and web designer Justin Massimo, Aaron founded Trout Predator Online, a fly fishing community specifically aimed at disseminating and sharing good information about fly fishing techniques and destinations. Since then, the community has grown and is the home to some of the best information on the web about Euro nymphing. Aaron and Justin produce multiple short videos every month on everything from fly tying tutorials and tips to short destination adventure videos. All can be found on their website, including information on European nymphing techniques. Aaron, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
How are you? Glad to be here.
Good. I don't know. How many shows have we done together? Quite a few. Four or five?
Let's yeah, see. Four or five, somewhere around there. A bunch.
A bunch.
It's been a while.
Two, four. This is the fifth show. Wow, that's a lot. So I did get a question right away on the Internet, and I think I might answer this question for you. It says, it says, I am looking at a photo of you with a big, big trout. I thought that remote areas tend to have numbers of trout, but not necessarily big ones. Trout the size of the one in the photo attract fishermen. Did you hike to New Zealand to catch that trout? Please tell me that trout that size available to those of us who are willing to take a hike a few hours to find a fish like that. Well, Phil, in California, every fish that Aaron catches is that big. Every one. It doesn't matter where he goes. Right, Aaron?
Well, you know, I mean, I get lucky. I get lucky every once.
You get lucky once in a while.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, now that's one of your bucket fishes, right? I mean that was a nice catch.
Well, my largest stream trout to date was actually caught, I don't know, 25 miles away from my house in New Jersey in the Croton watershed in Westchester County. We did a show about that, you know.
Yeah.
Close to New York City. So, you know, big trout are everywhere. You just have to, you know, be in the right place at the right time and do the right thing, and you'll catch them.
That's right. That's right. Well, I know some of the questions that we had come in tonight were about, I think people, based upon the title of the show, got the impression that, you know, we're talking, you know, to get away from the crowds, you've got to go back in the wilderness somewhere or take a long river trip or something like that. But that's not really what we're talking about tonight, is it, Aaron?
No. It's very interesting. You know, like you go to Montana, you know, you do the regular drill, you fly into Helena, Bozeman, or Billings, and you fish the big, you know, the Bighorn, the Madison, or the Missouri River. Those are three of the most popular and most, you know, used rivers in Montana. And basically it's like pick a number, you know, put the boat in. You might be the 50th boat down the river, you know, in that particular day. And you catch the same fish as everybody. The fish are all the same size. They've all been caught, you know, a few hundred times for that, you know, in that particular year. And you really don't get a really unique experience. Yeah, you probably do catch more and larger fish than you do if you fish out in the east. However, there's a lot more opportunities that offer both the scenic aspect and the sizable fish possibility aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and right. When we purchased this land, you know, in Phillipsburg, of course, we fished there before because you got to do your research and due diligence. But we, you know, saw some, you know, we fished some rivers where we caught some really sizable trout in places that we thought were way underfished for Montana. And the fish size and frequencies were, you know, quite astonishing. So, you know, and it wasn't a hike back into the roads with your bear, into the, you know, into the middle of nowhere with your bear spray either.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah. Well, give us, we didn't really divulge where we were going to talk about tonight in our description of the show. So tell me a town in Montana that we're going to be close to so people, if they want to go in Google Maps, can get oriented.
Phillipsburg, Montana. Phillipsburg, Montana. It's an amazing place. It's situated right at the foothills of the Pintler Mountain Range, so there's always something nice to look at. It's a great western old mining town, and, you know, the people are wonderful, and it has everything you want, places to stay, fish, big fish, little fish, whatever, you know, indigenous cutthroat trout, large brown trout. It's that's my home base for when I fish out there.
Can you say the name again? 'Cause
Phillipsburg.
Okay, I think I kind of stepped on you there, so I didn't want to make sure I got the right information. Yeah, so Phillipsburg, and the the rivers we were going to talk about tonight, and we'll address some of the other questions that came in too, are four of them. And you want to share those, just roughly which ones we're going to talk about tonight, Aaron, and then we'll get into detail later.
Well, we'll talk about the Upper Clark Fork. The Upper Clark Fork is a freestone fishery. It comes from Warm Springs, Anaconda. You know, it originates in Warm Springs and Anaconda, which is the confluence of Warm Spring Creek and Silverboat Creek. And it's actually it starts at one of the largest Superfund sites in the world. The mine in Anaconda, Butte. It's the wastewater from the mine, from an open pit mine, much similar to what they want to do in Pebble, you know, Pebble Mine in Alaska. So if you want to see how bad that can be, go to Butte and look at the hole. So yeah. It originates there. It starts off as, you know, just surface water off a pond. But luckily the valley that it flows through is filled with limestone, you know, so there's spring water that flows into it. And the river starts off as this small little creek. And once Silverbow and Warm Springs joins together, the outflow from the ponds, the filling ponds that clean up the mine drainage, where they allow the water to go into these ponds and the metals sink to the bottom of the ponds, and what you're left with is the clean water. That enters in the river, and that's where the actual really good trout fishing begins, where you actually have, which is quite ironic, water that was once too dirty for anything supports a very, very healthy wild trout population for the next over 100 miles.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I was up in Lake Kississing up in northern Manitoba, and one of the guides took us off the beaten track to one of the mines there, and I can't remember what they were mining there, but there they had, I think, were using arsenic or something. But it looked like, the whole area looked like a nuclear bomb went off. Nothing was growing, not even weeds, where they had this mine. And the lake that was associated with was this really ugly, you know, tannic color, and nothing was growing there anymore. So this is kind of a good thing that they were able to turn that water around, I think, and make it good for trout again, huh?
I mean, it's quite amazing, and it's really neat when you go to a place that you know didn't, you know, that, you know, held trout before the mining, and, it, you know, the population of fish was prolific before it took place, and it was, for lack of a better word, destroyed and brought back. I mean, these aren't like the indigenous fish. You don't have the, you know, West Slope pepperell trout in there. However, you do have, you know, a few thousand wild rainbow and, you know, brown and rainbow trout per mile. You know, and some of the fish do reach 28 to 30 inches in there. So it's not a place that where they're all small.
Yeah, yeah. Ray in Superior, Montana, wrote in with a question. He said, what sections of the Clark Fork are you familiar? We usually see 4 to 6 fly fishers per year on the section that flows by our place. So he must live on the Clark Fork somewhere. I don't know where. Superior.
Well, there it is, like Montana without the crowds, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Four to six people a year on a stream that has an average of 1,800 trout per mile. And it's about 60 to 80 feet in width until, you know, the Blackfoot River empties into it and then the Bitterroot River enters into it. So since you don't read about it all the time, I guess it doesn't exist the most. You know, it's not on the radar for most people. Like,
yeah.
They don't, you know, plan a trip around going there when, in fact, like, they're missing out. Like, the, you know, the Trico hatch there is amazing. I mean, it's one of the better ones I've seen anywhere in Montana. The early blueing olive hatch, if you have, you know, if you don't have runoff yet, is, you know, epic. The caddis hatches are epic. The PMDs are amazing. I mean, it doesn't have the abundance of stoneflies, which usually comes with exceptional water quality. However, it has enough food to feed the big fish that are in there. And,
now,
you know, the majority of the trout you're going to catch in there, you know, 15 to 22 inches, which is on par with most of the places in Montana.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Now, all the rivers we're going to talk about tonight, are they all within, say, 30 minutes of Phillipsburg, would you say? Or?
Well, all right. There's a disclaimer on that. It's within an hour because it's Montana,
okay.
And we all know that driving out west is a lot different than driving, you know, in traffic in a city. So, like, an hour drive is really nothing, and plus you have a lot of beautiful stuff to look at. So everything is within 1 hour, and one of the streams, you know, Rock Creek, is, you know, 15 minutes from Phillipsburg.
Okay.
So the central base would be Rock Creek, but an hour away, you can catch unlimited amounts of trout wherever you want to catch them.
Okay, well, that's since we started – well, hold it. Let me back up here. We had a couple of general questions I wanted to get at before we jump into each river in more detail. Tony had a good question from Kansas. He says, what months do you recommend for avoiding crowds, and is there still good fishing this late in the fall?
Well, let's start off with this late in the fall. I'm going there for 7 days, no, 9 days next month. So, yes, it's good. It's good, you know, the fishing in that area, since most of these rivers are in the valleys, they don't get frozen. So you could fish them in the winter. However, you know, there's a very good ski area, so I'll actually spend time skiing. Rock Creek is the only one that actually has enough ice to make it unfishable. The upper Clark Fork is fishable. Most of the lower part of the Bitter River is fishable. Most of the lower part of the Blackfoot River is fishable. So you're not really, you know, there really is no specific downtime. But, you know, like the best fishing, which is what I, you know, what I guess he's getting at, is July. And will you see people? Yes. But you're not going to see people to the point where you're not going to be able to fish in solitude.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be people there, but it's not going to be a guy lined up every 100 feet down the river.
Yeah, yeah. One thing about the West, and I found this out, Julie, my partner, and I tend to leave on the day of the holiday. So, like, if it's July 4th, we leave on July 4th to take our July 4th weekend, you know,
yeah.
That kind of thing, Memorial Day, labor, you know. And what's amazing is all we see is cars coming the other direction and no one going out the direction we're going. So we always have any place to ourselves. But what's interesting, I was over fishing the Gunnison River on Labor Day, and the day after Labor Day, you know, I had fished there in July, just like you said, which is kind of prime time in the Rockies, and there was probably at the put-in 10 boats, you know, guide boats most of. I think I was the only private boat
yep.
going in. There's like 10 guide boats at that put-in. There are other put-ins than the one we were at. When I went the day after Labor Day, there was one other boat at that put-in. I mean, we had the whole river to ourselves. It was incredible.
It's amazing how West, like, September 1st is like the we don't go there anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And it's some of the September is, I think, one of the best months in the Rockies, you know, for weather, and it's not so hot, and, you know, it's gorgeous out here. So.
No, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
If I could choose one month to fish there, it would be probably September. That would be my favorite month. You know, you get the golden leaves on the trees, you know, like, the, you know, everything starts to cut, you know, turn colors. The air is crisp. It's cool.
Yeah. Nice.
September's awesome.
There was another question about time of year. Terry Martin asked, what's the best time to start fishing in the spring? And what are the best flies to use in the spring?
All right. So spring, as you know, in the Rockies can be, you know, kind of a crapshoot. You know that right away, like in March, the fishing is going to be good. You have lower water. There's no snow melt yet. You have hatches. You know, you have the blueing olives. And you have some squalus stoneflies. So you can have good fishing in March through, like, maybe, you know, middle of April. And then you have snow melt. And then sometime in June, the water starts to recede, you know, right into the summer months. And that's when the fishing is good. So you do have a window of opportunity early in the spring. So, you know, mid-March through mid-April is a guarantee, and then after that you're taking your chances with, you know, snow melt and rising temperatures and some precipitation. So
runoff.
Once you get that runoff, you're out for a while.
Yeah.
And these, disclaimer, these are freestone streams that you're going to be fishing here. They're not tailwaters, which is another unique thing. You know, usually when you go to Montana, you think tailwaters. These are all freestone streams, and they're not dammed. So, you know, you don't have that comfort zone where, you know, yeah, the water might be high, but it's clear.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we usually in the Rockies get a pretty good runoff, you know, beginning of June, that kind of time frame. So depending on how far north and south you are. So
yeah.
So back to Upper Clark's Fork, What's the for this particular river? What's the access like for that river?
The access to Montana is very straightforward. As long as there's a bridge, you can access the river at that bridge and walk anywhere within the stream that you want. It's not set up like Colorado where the landowner owns the riverbed.
Right.
So wherever there's a bridge, you can go access the river and fish.
Below the high water mark. Yeah.
Below the high water mark, yes. And on, like, the Clark, Upper Clark Fork, like, the landowners are very, generous. Like, if you ask them and you're nice, like, they'll let you fish there.
Yeah.
It's not like there's 400 people beating down their door every day to go fish there.
Yeah, because you're not in those areas, yeah. Yeah, well, there's been a lot of controversy, of course, in Montana about
water rights. There's more than enough controversy about land use and water access issues. It's amazing.
yeah, well, some big landowners are trying to tie up, major parts of rivers and that's a major worry just going forward in life right now, because in Colorado we have tons of people moving here. And, I look at the mountains and I go, okay, there's only so much wilderness up here and only so much streams. How can we support all these people coming in, to the state? So someday it may be pay to play no matter where you go. Let's hope not, but...
Well, in Colorado, what's the percentage of public land? It's like 17% of the land in Colorado is public.
I don't have any idea.
It's not a lot. It's very small.
Yeah. Well, half the state is, plains, which is not where people go.
And then you have the mountains.
Yeah. So half the state you can write off right away, 50% right there. People don't go there.
Well, you would just hope that the states would buy conservation easements onto these pieces of land, to preserve, someone's ability to access the water.
Yeah, it's like the Gunnison I was just talking about is really tricky. I had to get a guy to highlight my map so I could know where I could anchor and where I couldn't, because, like, the first 200 yards is public on the left and private on the right, and then it goes private for a half a mile, and then it goes public both sides, then it goes public, and there's no markers, So if you're not a guide there, you really don't know where things are, and it's really kind of troublesome, I thought, of a place because of that.
No, and then you get some of those landowners, that come out and, most people don't know better, and I would believe someone in a boat, it's drifting down, doesn't have a guide sticker on their boat, really doesn't know better. And you get some landowner just crazed and comes out yelling and screaming at you. And it's, I don't know. I mean, it's gotten to become that bad that people are fighting, like literally fighting over going fishing. Like there's better things to fight about right now than dropping an anchor in a river or casting a fly, into the water and like at the bottom.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Let's take a quick break. Aaron, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some of the other rivers that you got lined up for us. The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It's involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, in the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, and in the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is also helping to prevent introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. The Federation has won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has given so much to each of us. So join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. You can find out more information about them at fedflyfishers.org. That's fedflyfishers.org. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Aaron Jasper about Montana without the crowds. If you'd like to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Aaron, I always ask my guests, what's going on in your fly fishing world, and I know you've had some life changes happen in your neck of the woods, right? You want to tell us what's going on in, with you?
Well, I got married in May.
You got married in May. That's major, Aaron. That's major.
Yeah, I guess that's... Yeah, that's noteworthy.
Yeah, but you've changed careers and all that as well, right?
Well, I work with a friend of mine. You know, we purchased some land in Montana. Now, I went back to teaching in the intermediary, and I'm going to get an MBA. Mm-hmm. So we're in a period of some transition here.
But you still, that affected your time on the river?
No, not at all. What it does is I wouldn't say it affects my days on the river. I would say that maybe the hours are affected. You know, like instead of going fishing for 8 hours, I go for two, three, 4 hours, depending on where I am. However, I still get out there, trust me, the same amount of
Good for you.
Here. Yeah, no. Fishing is something I do, and my wife, God bless her, she knows that, and she doesn't try to stop me.
Yeah. Well, congratulations.
She thinks crazy.
Congratulations. Yeah. So, well, good. Well, let's jump back in here and look at some of these. You've already talked about the hatches on Clark's Fork. So anything else you want to tell us about the Clark's Fork before we move on to another river?
Well, the Upper Clark Fork, you can count that, pretty much all the way into Missoula. So you can fish as soon as you get off the plane. So it's not like Billings where you have to drive, 2 hours to go to the Bighorn or Helena where you have to drive a considerable amount of distance before you can get to the Missouri because of the, a desert. It's mostly just, flat desert land with some tailwaters in those two places. Bozeman's good because you can, get to a river pretty quick. But the Clark Fork in Missoula is an amazing fishery with a real abundance of trout. It's a larger river. There's around 3,000 fish per mile in there, give or take, and, in some of the stretches. But you can get to the river in about 10 minutes from the airport. So you can literally get your stuff from the baggage carousel, get your car, and be fishing in an hour, which is pretty, unique for a lot of the Western destinations.
Yeah.
And also in, the Clark Fork, any of the tributaries hold fish and not just catch one in a spot and move. You can fish any piece of water that goes into that stream. And it holds lots of trout and even some bull trout. I haven't landed a bull trout yet, but I've had a couple break hooks on some of my nymphs when I'm fishing dry dropper and, some, other mishaps of fish running into trees. But it's an amazing place.
How long is that from the ponds where they're letting out the water down to Missoula? How much river and mileage is there, would you say?
I would say that's around 100 miles.
Oh, wow. That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of river.
Yeah. So you usually would fly into Missoula and then go from there? Is that your point?
Yeah. Yep.
Now, what about staying in the area for all these that we're talking about? Is Phillipsburg a good place to stay, or is there a better place to put home base if you want to fish all these rivers?
Phillipsburg is a good place to stay. There's a lot of there's campgrounds there, like in the Lolo National Forest. There's a few smaller hotels. You can get, you can rent houses and cabins on VRBO or Airbnb. So it's not a place in Montana where, there's, chain hotels. And that's, helps to create the experience. Now, if you want to fish the same places that are near there, yeah, you can stay, in Anaconda or Butte and drive and fish there. But, you lose that, intimacy when you stay at one of those hotel chains when you fish. I'd much rather stay at a house, rent a cabin.
Oh, yeah.
Stay at a hotel, because you unpack and you live there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I'm with you on that. Well, let's talk about Rock Creek then, next on your list. So where is Rock Creek from Phillipsburg?
Rock Creek is about 15 minutes from Phillipsburg. It's formed by the Middle Fork of Rock Creek, the East Fork of Rock Creek, and the Ross Fork. They all come in actually right by our cabin and create Rock Creek. Rock Creek, in the upper sections of Rock Creek, it's about 80% indigenous West Slope cutthroat trout. And it's an undammed stream. So the fish can move up and down the river as they choose. So in the summer when the water's warmer, they can move upstream, you know, to near where our property is, or a ranch at Rock Creek downstream of us. And downstream of the ranch at Rock Creek, it's private, but you can walk the banks for about 8 miles from Skulkahoe Road Pass is where the creek starts, down to the next bridge. From that next bridge down, there's unlimited public access. There's access everywhere. So Rock Creek is one of those streams that you can literally drive, park, fish, and catch fish. And I don't see it getting overfished. You know, I live there for a lot of the year, more than Lisa wants. And I still find myself fishing it. If I'm there for 10 days, I probably fish it like for, you know, 3 or 4 of the days. And then the other days I'll drive around and fish other places.
And
I haven't been dissatisfied yet.
Yeah. So is there any particular way you fish Rock Creek? Is it any different than other freestone rivers? Or?
No, you can nymph it. It's harder not to catch fish at Rock Creek than it is to catch fish at Rock Creek.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I mean, it's a freestone stream, so the fish, you know, they're very opportunistic, which most freestone streams, you know, the trout are. The size is not, you know, small at all. So, you know, you have fish that are larger than normal, opportunistic, and not a ton of fishing pressure. So that makes the fishing in itself a little bit easier than most of the streams that you fish and less technical. But the way I like to fish is just dry dropper. Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
With any, you know, foam fly like a chubby Chernobyl and any beadhead nymph with a tungsten bead underneath it, and you're going to do pretty well. You can't miss.
Yeah, now are there any particular patches you associate with this river?
Very popular is the salmon fly hatch on Rock Creek.
Mm.
It's quite epic. It happens in June, and you know, if it's a really cold year, you'll have a little bit of activity left in July. But the month of June can be amazing with just large dry flies just thrown at the banks. Like, I floated the river once and easily caught over 100 fish and just got bored and was like, let's row out of here. We're done. And,
fly hatch usually follows the runoff. Is that usually the case?
Yeah, right after the runoff, when the water gets back into the 50s, they hatch in abundance there. And it's a big hatch. Like, you know, a lot of the rivers out west, you hear, like, you know, there's a salmon fly hatch. Yeah, like the Madison has an excellent salmon fly hatch.
Yeah.
However, there's some rivers they say there's a salmon fly hatch. Well, you know, I don't consider one salmon fly a hatch. There, like, you're going to see hundreds of salmon flies flying around like small birds.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be it's not a disappointment, but that's the time of year when you take the nymph off and you just go catch fish.
Yeah.
You know, your average fish is going to be, you know, an average fish would be 10 to 14-inch cutthroat, maybe a 17, 18-inch one's a big one. You know, a brown trout can be anywhere from, you know, 12 to 20 inches long, and your rainbow trout are all going to be between 14 and 17 inches. So the average fish size in there is quite impressive when you talk about freestone streams.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you'd mentioned floating. I didn't really ask you that about the upper Clark's Fork. Let's jump back to that for a second. Is much of that floatable, or is it pretty much weighed?
Both.
Both.
When there's a lot of water in the early season, you will see some guides floating it. And you know, when they float by and, you know, no one's not smiling. So that's a very good sign. You know, you can tell when someone's had a bad day. And even when there's water, if you see three or four boats, that's a lot.
Yeah.
It's very underfished. I think that the length of the creek is intimidating to people.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, like, where do I fish? You know, like, my answer to that one in Montana is you just go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Just go fishing.
Now, what about Rock Creek? Is that floatable?
Yeah, well, Rock Creek has very unique regulations. You're allowed to float it from June 1st through June 30th, and then after that, it's wade fishing only.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So, you know, it does get a fair amount of pressure in June. The guides make their money, and then once they're done, you know, the river can be devoid of anglers some days. Like, there are some days that you'll drive, like, the 40 miles Rock Creek down Rock Creek Road, you know, where you can access it, and you only see, like, 10 or 12 cars. And this is, like, in July.
Wow.
And then, you know, let's talk about September. You might not see anybody.
Yeah.
So, It's a very, very unique place. And it's also slated to become one of the designated, you know, American National Wild and Scenic Waterways. It's on the list in Montana. It's on dams. So, yeah, it's a truly amazing place. I love it. I mean, you know, am I going to catch a fish like the one in the picture that you have there? You know, probably not. But someone did catch a bull trout that was, you know, 36 inches long last year on a Stamplon worm. So, yeah, it's big enough. So you do have the chance of catching something giant. But, you know, most of the fish you catch are going to be, you know, 12 to 18 inches long. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Or I hope. Or what does it take to get them?
Well, if they were all as big as the one you had in the picture, you know, you'd get bored. You'd want something bigger or something, you know. But, yeah, it's all a matter of perspective, too, you know, of where you're coming from and what you're doing that day, too. You know, sometimes those little, you know, 8-inch brookies are fun just because of where you're at and what you're doing, you know. So let's take another question. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, can I address that, you know, real fast?
Sure, yeah.
It was funny. I was out there. This is 3 years ago, and I put up, like, a picture of a nicer cutthroat on the Internet. And, you know, on the Internet, anyone can say anything because it's the Internet, and it's uncensored. So the guy goes, come fish a real river, the Bighorn. And, you know, I'm like, I kind of bit my tongue, cause, you know, because I'm like, you understand, this is a real river. This is a real fish that actually belongs here. And the Bighorn River is a totally man-made fishery, and if they didn't put fish in it, it would never be what it is.
Yeah.
So I just find it funny that, you know, I am fishing a real river, and this is the real size of what the fish would be if man didn't manipulate it. So I just thought that was funny.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about more about these rivers. Captain Bob Jaspers of Flats Time Charters will introduce you to the Mosquito Lagoon, Indian River, and No Motor Zone of the Banana River on the east coast of Central Florida. Only a short drive from Orlando, you will sight fish, big redfish, spotted sea trout, and black drum, as well as the seasonal snook and tarpon. Captain Bob is a lifetime resident of the area, and it shows in his knowledge of the local fish, flora, and fauna. Call Flats Time Charters now and arrange your next memorable adventure. You can reach Captain Bob Jaspers at 321-631-4051. That's 321-631-4051. Or go to his website at flatstime.com. That's FLATSTIME.com. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Aaron Jasper about Montana without the crowds. If you want to ask Aaron a question, just go to our homepage, askaboutflyfishing.com, and use that text box to ask your question. Let me just kind of see. We've got... this was a question that came in earlier, and it looks like it's being asked again now. Questions about the drought. A couple questions about Tim and Kaiser and Marianne Ceruzzi. Both are asking about, you know, what effect the drought has had out in Montana.
You know, the water levels got low, and as, you know, Mother Nature kind of protected itself. But the low water, it wasn't that warm this summer. So it wasn't a situation where you had low water and then, you know, super warm air temperatures. So the fish, for the most part, did okay. My only concern is what amount of fish were killed by the birds. Because, one afternoon I was fishing on Rock Creek, and I saw a bunch of mergansers. We know that they eat fish. And I saw bald eagles actually kill two of them. So there's two. So I really think that animals and wildlife might have taken more of a toll on the trout population than actual the drought and warm water. And yeah, I didn't know this, but excuse me?
I was going to say hard for them to find a place to hide in low water.
Yeah, no, it was pretty bad on some of the streams. You know, I won't lie. It was really sad to see, you know, like historically low flows, just fish sitting in the deepest spots just hoping that it would rain. I think even the fish were doing rain dances. And there was one point, like I was out there, you know, speaking of holidays, I was out there over the July 4th weekend. I think it rained on July 5th. And then I went back out August 14th till the beginning of September, and it still hadn't rained. So it was 2 months without rain.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I think those climate change deniers after this summer and the last one, I think have, you know, probably come along and say, hey, you know what, something is happening here. This isn't normal.
Yeah, no, it's readily apparent depending on where you are in the world. There's no doubt about that.
But another thing, Roger, you know, fly fishing is a large part of Montana's economy. You know, it's almost $10 billion worth of revenue for the state. So they actually take care of the streams. Like, for example, you know, on the Big Hole, I mean, I know that's not in the area, but, you know, we can address this one. They closed multiple sections of the Big Hole because of the low flows to angling. And I don't know many states that would do that because a lot of money is made on the Big Hole, but in order to preserve the fishery, they'll shut sections of the river down to ensure that the trout have the best chance of survival. So, you know, it's a resource first.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't stock fish in the rivers. So if they don't have the fish in the rivers, you know, there's no, it's easy. No fish, no money coming in. So.
Yeah. Yeah, they need
I wish more states to do that.
Yeah, I know, you know, I've been up on the Bighorn. You were talking about that earlier, you know, in July or something. And, you know, it really makes you wonder sometimes what you're doing out there at that time of year. Number one, it's hot. And number two, the fish seem to be suffering so much, you know, that you really almost hate to catch one. So, and I think the authorities need to come in and step in once in a while and do that.
Well, for example, in the Yellowstone River this summer, you know, I'm sure you've heard about this one. They had the parasite similar to what was in the Snake River in Jackson, Wyoming, and it was killing the whitefish and some of the trout. And they went down and shut down 184 miles of the Yellowstone River to all fishing, any activity, all the tributaries, everything. And, I mean, I'm sure businesses lost money, and I'm sure there'll be insurance claims, but the state saw, you know, an opportunity, you know, like something not working right, and they didn't wait, they didn't hesitate, they closed everything down until they figured it out, and then it only opened up, like, in the, you know, I think 6 weeks ago they opened it back up to fishing, you know, because they, you know, because it's very important to them. It's, you know, we got to, you know, we have to know what's happening, test the fish, and make sure that it's not something where we have to take fish out of the river to preserve indigenous or wild populations of fish. So I just like that whole resource-first mentality that they have there.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
there's
a lot of other situations, any kind of business, you know, and you got to feel for the guides up there that are working the river, and, you know, that's their livelihood and so forth. But, you know, if your job depends on Mother Nature, you have to prepare for those kinds of things. I mean, you can be down in Belize, you know, and get wiped out for a whole week by, you know, tropical storms or a hurricane. And, you know, they don't make money down there when that's happening. You can't fish, you know. And so, you know, the same kind of thing are the farmers as well. You know, they have to deal with Mother Nature. So, it's part of the game, but like you say, resource first. You know, if you don't preserve that, then you'll have nothing at all for years, you know. So, and that's not going to do anybody any good. So.
And plus, you know, it's an inherent risk when you're doing business. I mean, you know, like you right. have to, you know, be prepared, you know. And also, you know, any good guide there definitely knows a place where they can still take people fishing.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Montana is one of those places, especially the place, where, you know, around the area around Phillipsburg. Any little stream around there, you can go catch trout. And some of the streams around there have trout that are in excess of 20 inches in rivers that you can literally drop your rod on one side of the river and the tip will be on the bank on the other side. It's quite amazing the number, size, and frequency of fish.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about Warm Springs now. That was another one on your list. Where's Warm Springs?
Well, Warm Springs is right outside of Anaconda. It's a tributary again. It's a stream that was once polluted, and you know has made a major comeback. It's a smaller freestone stream. It runs through Anaconda, which I don't think is the most pretty place on earth, and I'm sure that anybody that's listening will understand exactly what I'm saying. Because when you come into town, you see the old mining tailings, and you know you don't associate those things with trout. But, you know, Warm Springs Creek is one of those places that I think is neat, again, because you know the history of the area. You know that it, you know, suffered through some bad times. And the fishing is amazing. And the way we found that Warm Springs Creek was so good is we were just driving one day. We were driving home. We were like, you know what, let's try it. And the first cast off the bridge with a hopper got a 19-inch brown trout. So I was like, oh, let's put the waders on them. Let's go. And then, I don't know, like, you know, 6 hours later, an uncountable trout, you know, and it's just throwing a hopper around, you know, at anything that, like, it holds fish, you know, I don't know. I go there, I fish there a few hours almost every time that I come back from one of the further places on the way back home, because it's, you know, on the way back in from, like, the upper Clark Fork, you would drive through Anaconda. So at least there's a place to go fishing to break it up, you know. And it flows around 20 miles. From where it joins the Clark Fork all the way to its headwaters, and there's fish in the whole 20 miles. And some of that goes way up into the mountains, and it's only 5, 6, 7 feet wide, and it's still full of fish. And you can get some very, very big fish in there, like 25, 26-inch fish. You have that possibility of one that just shocks you.
And, one thing I wanted to bring up, because you were emphasizing it when we were talking about doing this show, you said, you know, one of the big things here is that these places, these streams and creeks and so forth, are all places where you can easily catch fish, that you don't have to work so hard. So that tells me, too, that this is a place to go, you know, maybe take the kids, people learning how to fish, you know, where they have a better shot than some of these other rivers where, you know, you have to be, you have to have a, you know,
PhD,
MBF, yeah. right, and masters in big fish or something. But
or bait. No.
But I mean, you keep saying that. Hey, you know, you can catch fish and this and that. So I think that's an important thing to bring up, is that you feel like, hey, this is a place. People can catch fish. You know. So.
Well, let me use my friend, for example. Like, he has two children, right? One is, you know, 5, there, and Ryan, she's, you know, 4, and they both caught plenty of trout using, you know, a Tenkara rod.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, you know, it's, yeah, oh, yeah, no, no, and they love it because there's constant action. I mean, you know, the cutthroat trout aren't the smartest trout either, you know. Anybody that's caught them knows that. So it's perfect for the kids. And when you have freestone streams everywhere that you literally look, you know, and they're small, you can take the kids there. It's not intimidating. You know, you don't need a 20-foot leader and a size 24 trico spinner like you do at the Missouri River. I mean, just for comparison, I haven't fished the Missouri River in a little while, a few years, and I went up there this year. And I just can't believe how much heavier the fishing pressure has gotten and the size of the tippet you need to go to catch the fish and, you know, how beat up the fish are when you catch them and how many, you know, it's amazing. It was mind boggling. Like I caught, I think like 17 or 18 fish in, you know, like till about 1 o'clock. And I told a friend of mine that that's what I caught. And he's like, that's amazing. And he was kind of like insinuating that I was lying. I'm like, no. And I thought it was slow. And he's like, no, the fishing has gotten really, really, really difficult there. So if you think about it, take a trip out west, you're going to, you know, pay all this money. Why are you going to go somewhere where it's hard?
Yeah.
I mean, I could point someone in the east to plenty of places where the fishing's difficult if they want to go test themselves out. But when you go out west, you know, part of the experience is to go to a place in the mountains and be by yourself and catch a lot of fish. Because that's what Montana is. It's easy, fun fishing.
Yeah.
You know, so like this part of Montana, you know, really fulfills that definition of like easy and fun and beautiful.
Yeah. So the Warm Springs, what's the access like for that then? You said it's about 15 miles. Everywhere. Okay, good.
Everywhere. Yeah. One thing that I've found, you know, is this particular summer, there's a creek up from the cabin, and we drive by it all the time, and we never go fishing there. And this is a true testament to how good the fishing is. It's 1.7 miles up from the cabin because I did the whole Apple Watch, and I biked there, so I knew the distance. So I just find it funny. So a mile and a half from the cabin, right, which is what, in the car? It's a, you know, three-minute drive. I did not fish this stream for the first 3 years of being there. I skipped it. I would drive by it. And my friend John came this summer to come fishing with me. And I was like, you know what? Like, let's try it in the evening, you know, like just in case it's not that good. Well, all right. We walk up the stream. First spot by the bridge, you know, there's a little riffle, shallow. So, you know, it's a small stream. It runs through a field. I think we caught like 10 or 15 fish out of like the first spot. So anyway, we ended up fishing till almost midnight with dry flies, with fish rising, and my friend got one 21 inches long, a brown trout, in a place that I didn't even fish.
Well, probably nobody else fishes like, there, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Nobody else is fishing there either. Yeah.
It's truly amazing. Like, people are so glued when they go to Montana. Like, I have to go to the Madison. I have to go to the Beaverhead. I have to go to the Yellowstone. There's fish everywhere. Like, you don't need to go to these famous places. Yeah, it's neat to say, yes, I fished the Madison. But it's also equally neat to say, like, hey, you know, I found this really awesome mountain freestone stream and caught his fish till I wanted to quit. Like, that's also fun. And, you know, it's also a testament to the variety of fishing in the state. Like, you can fish some very difficult freestone streams. You can go to some very technical spring creeks. You can fish some very, you know, difficult tailwaters as well. And you can fish the exact opposite. You can fish tailwaters where the fishing is very easy. You know, you could fish, you know, freestone streams that have some of the most easy fishing you're going to find anywhere. So it's just the diversity of fishing that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. We had a couple of questions come in on the Internet. I guess maybe some people missed this. Clark is asking, where do you fly into? You had said Missoula, but Bozeman's not too far down the road either, is it? It's about equal distance to that area.
Yeah, but you know what? Yeah, but you ready? If you're a frequent flyer, it's usually, you know, with United, it's only 12,500 miles one way. So that's not hard to get.
Yeah.
And to fly into Bozeman, I think it's like 25 to 50,000 miles each way.
Oh, really?
And then, Bozeman, it's pretty crazy how expensive it is to fly into there.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. If it's like $320 to fly into Missoula, it's double that to go to Bozeman. Like, you're paying Bozeman tax. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, I live half my time in Boulder, you know, and we call it the Republic of Boulder. And it's like, you know, you cross the county line and everything goes up by 50%, you know. It's just
Oh yeah, no.
Bozeman's similar to that. Yeah.
Oh, no. Bozeman, you know, I've been going to Montana since I was, you know, I don't know, 18 years old. So it's 22 years. I've seen Bozeman go from like this town to a city. And what's amazing about Bozeman is it doesn't grow up. Like in the Northeast, we build big buildings because we have to have big buildings. And Bozeman has just like been like kerplat and goes sideways. So Bozeman's grown from, you know, what I would say was like, you know, 2 miles by 2 miles to like 15 by 15 miles. Yeah. And there's actually traffic there now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's legitimate traffic in Bozeman, which I find hysterical. Yeah. So you don't have traffic in Salzburg.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. Okay, let's take another quick break here. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about our next rivers. So hang tight, folks. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California, features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or you can call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Aaron Jasper about Montana without the crowds. So if you want to ask Aaron a question, just type it in that form on our homepage, and we'll get the question. We'll try to get an answer tonight. Okay, Aaron, back to the Blackfoot now. That was the fourth one on your list. So where is the Blackfoot from Phillipsburg, our great center point?
The Blackfoot from Phillipsburg is about an hour drive. You take Route 1 to Route 90 west, and it's Route 200, follows the river pretty much the whole way up. And in Bonner is where you would start, and in Lincoln, you know, the home of, you know, the very bad person, Oklahoma City, that's the stretch of river that's the most productive is through there. The access on the Blackfoot River is, I would say, pretty good. In the lower sections of the river, the access is excellent. Once you get into the mountains and into the actual canyon, the access becomes a little more limited. But if you have a DeLorean Atlas, like the map, you know, which everyone should get when you take a vacation, they're $20, and it shows you every single road. It shows you every place you never wanted to go. So you can look at those maps, see where the bridges are, see where the roads butt up to the river, and you can find access very easily. So like in Montana, you don't need to see the sign with the fish hook and the fish to have access to the river. And that's a mistake that people commonly make when they go fishing in Montana, is they'll go to where the parking lot is. But if there's a bridge and you could park the bridge or the road dead ends, like terminates at the river, there's right away at the end of the road, which is generally, you know, 75 to 150 feet.
Yeah.
So if the road parallels the river and it's a large road, which would be a state road, you can actually go from that middle line of the road 150 feet, and in a lot of cases, that gives you other accesses to the river. I only found out that from being a landowner, that on the larger rivers, if someone puts a fence up, they know, it might say no trespassing, but if the river is very close to that fence and close to the road, it's public access. The reason why the fence is there is so the cattle doesn't get onto their property. And I found that out because we had cows on our property, and hence we had to put up a fence. So I didn't know that one. You know, I mean, that's a Montana thing, and I'm from New Jersey, so people have to give me some leeway on that one. The next door neighbors had fun with it, you know. They were like, you didn't know about that? I'm like, come on, you're talking to someone who lives. I could see Manhattan. I don't know about cows on my property. So I went there and it was all over. So let's just say the cows aren't coming back.
Yeah, and that was something that Aaron and I were joking about before we started the show, because there were some questions about backpacking and so forth, and running the Smith River, and which is what Aaron says, like a 7-day trip or something, about getting back in to get away from the crowds. And he says, and Aaron was telling me, he says, you got to be kidding. I don't like camping. I'm a city boy. So there you go. You know, it's get away from the crowds and you still don't have to backpack and do a 7-day river trip. And all you have to do is get to Phillipsburg, right? So there it is. Okay.
Phillipsburg might be one of the most unique Western towns. I mean, you know, just for where it is, and I mean, it really is like very isolated from the rest of the state, and it's very easy to get to, which I'm really surprised at how, you know, it's been kept quiet. And you know, I guess I don't know what I mean. I know the town wants to grow now. The mayor is very proactive, and you know, the county's really been, you know, trying, you know, to, you know, make it more of a destination. And I'm like, you know, they don't have to make it a destination. It is a destination.
Yeah.
You know, but people, yeah. You know, people have to, you know, go to the Bighorn and watch 100 boats go down the river in a day and go, man, I don't want to come. This isn't what I came here for. And like you said, it's 110 degrees out. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, how can you tell me that you're having an awesome day when you're sitting in a boat, it's in excess of 100 degrees, and I know it's dry heat versus humid heat out east, but you know what, Roger, I'm sure you'll agree, 110 degrees is 110 degrees. It's hot.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, I've had plenty of people, including my son, get dehydrated and get, you know, sick from the heat on the boat, you know, and it's just, it's like sitting in an oven, you know, at times, so I prefer not.
Yeah, you know. And plus, a lot of these places, you know, they're in actual forested areas. They're not in a desert because they're not tailwaters. So yeah. They're really in the mountains.
Yeah.
So it's not as hot.
Yeah.
And exactly. You fish in the shade because the rivers are smaller, so you actually have canopy. There's trees.
Yeah.
So you're not just cooking in the sun. You know, like the Missouri River. When I went there the one day, it's a 2.5-hour drive from the cabin. So I drove up there, and I mean, just standing there, I was sweating.
Yeah.
So, like, not only was fishing difficult, but, I mean, I'm just sitting there like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is not fun.
So, the Blackfoot is a freestone creek, too?
Yeah, the Blackfoot is a freestone creek. It was actually where, you know, the river where the whole story for River Run Through It was based around. You know, that area. Yeah, they filmed it on the Gallatin, but, you know, like, that's where the history of that book took place. So, you know, the Blackfoot River is, you know, a river with exceptional water quality throughout its entire length. There's bull trout, which is a great indicator of species. And that's one thing that I've said a few times, there's bull trout. Where you have bull trout, that means that you have excellent trout fishing. Because bull trout are kind of like a canary in the coal mine, you know. Like, if it survives there, that means it's really good there. So there's bull trout populations that are hanging on in this section of Montana. And not just one, you know, stream that has them. There's multiple rivers that have, you know, populations of bull trout. Yes, you're not allowed to catch them in Montana on purpose. But I've had them eat nymphs and eat hoppers, you know, and lost them. And I've heard stories of people catch them on salmon worms. So in places like, you know, like the Blackfoot River has quite a few of them because the Blackfoot River has an amazing amount of tributaries in its upper reaches. So in the summer, these fish will just migrate into the upper reaches of the stream and into the tributaries. And, you know, they're, you know, the needs for cold water is met, you know, there's food, there's lots of, you know, cutthroat trout for them to eat. And, you know, and they grow large. I mean, I've seen cutthroat trout in some of those tributaries, you know, almost 3 feet long, which I took a trip to British Columbia, and, I mean, I got one a little bit over 40 there. But these were fish that were, you know, almost as big. And, mm-hmm. you know, and thank God that I went to British Columbia the year before and got bull trout on my system because I definitely would have wanted to catch these fish if I hadn't caught a lot of them in B.C. But,
yeah.
You know, it's quite amazing when you go to a stream and you see the fish that belong there.
Yeah.
Like you're not fishing a stream where like they introduced the rainbow trout from California and the brown trout, you know, came probably from the east, which originated in Europe. So you're actually catching the fish that were there before people were there and, you know, quote unquote ruined it. And, you know, like, that's what makes it really unique, is that you're catching the fish that belong there on the Blackfoot. And in the lower reaches, you know, of course, you know, because it's connected to the Clark Fork, you have rainbow trout and brown trout in there as well. But, you know, once you get, you know, around Lincoln and above, like, you have mostly West Slope cutthroat trout and some bull trout. Mm-hmm. So it's a really unique, original Montana experience.
So where do you see the bull trout when you're fishing? Are they up closer to the colder water? Is that where they hang out rather than downstream where it starts to warm up?
Well, one thing I'll say about the bull trout is I learned this from BC, and, you know, like, let's put it like this. Like, I got so addicted to it last summer that I drove from Phillipsburg to, you know, into British Columbia on four separate occasions. The person at the office, at the border office, knew who I was by the third time. And that's a seven-hour drive. So one thing about bull trout is they're very unpredictable. You never know when you're going to catch one and, you know, or hook one. They're a very unique fish. The one thing they have going against them is that they're big. And a lot of the, you know, to go along with deforestation and logging, one of the reasons why you don't have a lot of bull trout is just plain and simple human abuse of a fishery. You know, back when there were lots of bull trout, you know, people would shoot them.
Oh, really?
This wasn't like a case. Oh yeah, no, it was bad. Yeah, and the locals will tell you that they regret it, but they'll also tell you stories that they would go to a hole and shoot the bull trout, and I just shake my head. I'm like, oh my god, but it's real. Like, you know, just human abuse has led that fishery to where it is. But luckily in Montana, you know, you can't even fish for them, so that eliminates a lot of fish mortality. And you know, like, if you put on a large streamer in Montana and there's bull trout in that stream and the game warden knows it, chances are he's, you know, roaming around, so you're going to get caught. Like, I think they caught these guys fishing some of the tributaries of the Flathead, and I think that they got enough fines and equipment taken away to the point where they're not going to do it again. Plus the embarrassment, because these were actually, like, professionals. Like, they were filming on streams in Montana where you couldn't fish for the bull trout and bragging about it, so they got their best deserve on that one. But about the bull trout, like, you can catch a bull trout in the middle of, you know, Missoula, Montana. They're highly migratory fish.
Oh, so, well, that's why I was asking about where they're at, because if you're sight fishing to a fish, you might not know it's a bull trout from looking at it in the river, right?
Well, when you're fishing in a stream where the trout are, well, I mean, yeah, up until a point, if it's 15 inches, yeah, you might not know. But it doesn't matter. I mean, if you catch it and you handle it right and you throw it back, it's fine. You know, I personally have no objective to that. But if I saw somebody fishing to, like, a 30-inch fish, like a log sitting in the middle of the river, I would probably be like, hey, you know, you really can't do that here, you know. But, I mean, you know, if you catch it by mistake and it eats a hopper and it's dumb enough to eat a hopper, you know what? Fair game. That's awesome. You caught it.
Oh, yeah. No, you can't do anything about that. But, you know, like you say, if you see a big fish, a lot of people might not know it's a bull trout. So.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, a cutthroat trout's not going to be 10 pounds. So I think that, you know, kind of eliminates,
that's the big
you
thing.
Know.
Yeah. If it's really big, stay away from it, basically, because it's probably, if they're known to be bull trout,
No, but it's just neat that, like, you know, you see them there. And, you know, I've had them take dry flies. It's just, you know, there's just something about catching, like you said, 8-inch brook trout, right? You go to the east.
Yeah.
You know, you catch, you know, like, guys are into catching, you know, small wild brook trout. I don't know why that same guy from the east that's into catching the wild brook trout doesn't go out west and try to duplicate that experience. It's just, you know, but like the locals, you know, like you'll see some local people, but you'll see very few people, you know, because, you know, whenever you're in Montana, you know, you see someone, you ask them where you're from. Very rarely on these streams does someone tell me they're from somewhere else but Montana.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So, so in the Blackfoot, you've got cutthroat, you said, and some bull trout. That's the primary species in that river?
Yeah, you know, from about 5 or 6 miles below Lincoln, all the way through all the headwaters and all the tributaries, you have bull trout and cutthroats. And I mean, it's really nothing to go fish with dry dropper, you know, during the prime month, like, you know, like late June through end of August, and, you know, catch 25, 30, 40 fish. And some of them are quite large in the Blackfoot, actually. Like some of the, you know, not bullshit, some of the cutthroats will be 18, 19 inches. Like these aren't small ones. They're very nice sized fish. You know, they're beautiful. And I mean, you could wade fish for them. So it's not something where you have to go spend, you know, $600 to hire a guide. You can go in the river and go catch fish.
Yeah, it sounds like of these are that way, seemingly, right? I mean,
yeah,
a lot of do-it-yourself here.
Yes, there is a lot of do-it-yourself, you know. But you just, like I tell my friends, you know, like, you know, these rivers, you know, it's not like in the east where, you know, you'll have a river that's 100 miles long, like the Delaware River, you know. And only the upper, like, 15 miles have trout. I'm like, this is Montana. The trout are everywhere.
Yeah.
The trout are, like, smallmouth bass in the east. Like, they're everywhere. They belong there.
Yeah. It's funny. You know? I just put in Google Maps Lincoln, Montana, and the picture it shows is a picture somebody shot out of their car window of the gate to a ranch, and there's grazing land. So they don't even have a picture of a town there. So that tells you it's pretty rural out there, huh?
Yeah, you're not going to get cell phone service like that. So, like, if you're into Instagram and Facebook and everything, you know, I mean, you probably have to hold off till you're back at the airport to not some pictures.
Population of Lincoln, 1,100. So there you go. Yeah.
Hey, I don't have a problem with that.
And so what's the access like there to the Blackfoot?
Like I said, you know, there's Montana Fish and Game Accesses, which you can find on the website, and the compendium comes with a list of accesses for each river. But like that's the Lorne map of Montana. I wish I had mine by the bed, but I'm in New Jersey. It's in the cabin in Montana, so you know it's about 2,200 miles away. I'm sorry, but
the Lorne map.
The Lorne, D-E-L-O-R-N-E, and it, you know it's red. It's a big book. And you get the one for each state you fish. And, you know, Tori Collins, you know, my good friend, introduced me to him. And you can find all the quote-unquote secret spots you want with that. So,
quote-unquote, yeah. Okay.
On the Blackfoot River, I mean, the upper, you know, part of the river, I mean, that's, you know, the canyon, you know, and that's where the largest density of fish is. You know, in the upper reaches, of course. It's the most fertile, cold. The habitat's not as degraded. And then from there up, there's lots of logging roads. You know, there's lots, you know, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. You know, these pine trees are worth money, so people sell their land for logging. So the roads are well-maintained that go into the backcountry there. So on all these streams, there's logging roads that go near them and over them, so that also provides public access to the stream.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can literally take a dart and throw it at a piece of a map near Lincoln in particular, and go to any one of those little streams, little blue lines, and go catch fish all day.
Yeah.
It's not one of those places where I could say, like, you know, go to this pool by this bridge and it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, like, everywhere. Huh?
Every spot is awesome. And that's the one thing I love about out west, you know. Like in the east here, like every pool has the name.
Wow.
So the people can go to it because it's quote unquote better, or the truck comes there more times. Well, out west, it's great because, you know, it's the spot by the bridge. Because
yeah.
Every spot's, so they don't have to have a name for the spot. I mean, yeah, on a river like, you know, like the Frying Pan, you got the toilet bowl because it's right next to the dam. But outside of that, you know, there's not many named spots.
Yeah.
So, you know, any place where you can get access where there's a road, go fishing.
Well, let's see. We've got a few questions left in the queue here online. Let me see if we can knock some of these out. Josh in Utah says, do you find you like to use different patterns on Montana waters with less fishing pressure?
You know, how can you say this? I'm not a fan of tying flies. I love to fish. I don't like tying flies. So, you know, in Montana, I use the same flies that I use at home. I mean, you know, it really doesn't matter. I mean, you know, a mayfly nymph in the east, looks the same as one from out west. And when you have fish that are even more opportunistic, the nicer the fly you bring there and the more realistic, you know, like the more well-constructed the fly is, the more fish you're going to catch. So, I mean, I don't know. There's no reason to make special flies. I mean, a simple rubber leg does just fine. I mean, you know, a hopper, a chubby Grenoble catches fish like the whole summer long. So there's no reason to go crazy with the fly patterns in this area of Montana. It's more about just, like, having the confidence. Like, you know what? Like, this hasn't been written about 400 times, like the Missouri and the Bighorn and the Madison. And just know that there's fish there and go catch them.
Yeah.
You know, it's more about just go fishing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to use streamers, you have plenty of fish. If you want to use, you know, I'm not going to say use a 20-inch long articulated streamer. You know, if you want to use a bar slump buster, even, I mean, this is the kind of place where, you know what, you can just throw on a woolly bugger and catch fish.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that kind of, for the most part.
A couple of questions from Phil in California, Kentucky. He's very interested in that picture of that fish. He says, I tend to think that big fish want a big meal, and so like fishing streamers, I'd like to hear about, I'd like to hear about how you caught that big trout in the posted photo. Was gear crucial? Is time on the water a big factor in catching a big trout? So you want to end our night with telling him the story about that trout?
Well, I'll help everybody out, a little bit on the secret to catching big fish. You see a lot of this new craze is like using larger streamers. Now, you know, trout, a big trout does become carnivorous to some extent, and they do eat larger food items, you know, like juvenile trout and big sculpins and, you know, other fish. Now, I haven't seen a streamer yet that up close looks like an exact copy of, you know, a rainbow trout or a small brown trout or, you know, a sculpin. You know, I've seen stuff that's close, but I haven't seen anything that, like, really exactly matches it. So when you're, you know, the way that you take this over to your fishing and your mindset to catching big fish is you got to think about it like this, right? Big fish don't get big by being stupid, or they wouldn't be big. You know, somebody would keep them at some point. So, you know, big fish, you know, they have to make a mistake. You know, you need them to make a mistake to catch them. Now, when are you more apt to get the fish to make a mistake? By throwing a fly that's 6 inches long that doesn't look real, or having them revert back to their instincts of feeding on nymphs and a riffle? Now, I go with the nymphing for the simple fact that once a trout feeds on, you know, nymphs, it never forgets what they are. And, you know, every trout with the exception of one that I've caught over 30 inches has been on a nymph, and it has been on a size 16 or smaller. And I think I'm up to 7 or 8 now. And they've all been, you know, with the exception of one that was caught at night on a wet fly, they've all been in the middle of the day in a riffle during a hatch feeding on nymphs.
Wow.
So, yeah, you know, I'm sure at some point, you know, someone gets lucky and, you know, catches the fish and gets it to react to an articulated streamer and it bites it. But, however, I'm sure that you'll agree and other people will agree, you know, like you'll throw that big streamer out there, the fish follows it, you get all excited, and then what does it do? It turns around.
Yeah.
Because it realizes that it's not real. So, you know, a higher percentage of fish, big fish, are caught on nymphs versus streamers simply because the fish is more apt to make a mistake when it's actively feeding than when it's dormant and sitting in a log jam, you know, just like sulking. And you might bring it out or entice a strike because the fly is big and it aggravates the fish. Yeah. But, you know, this past summer I was in the Madison and I got, you know, I caught a fish that was almost 30 inches on a size 16, you know, rusty spinner in the evening, because the fish, was in there eating the salmon flies, and, you know, like, these are big fish, they're supposed to be eating fish, but this thing is eating flies and nymphs, And in the evening, there was a spinnerfall of Epeirus mayflies. And this big trout, you know, was rising in the middle of the river for spinners.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to me, like, that's the, you know, real definition of screwing up if you're a big fish.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So, you know, as an angler, you have to be an opportunist, you know? Like, you know, like, you cannot say, I'm going to only catch big fish. You know, it just happens.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Someone that says that they're, you know, only hunting big fish with a big streamer, I mean, you know what? I mean, maybe once a year they get one that's really worth writing home about. I mean, you know, but somebody that's a very proficient nymph fisherman, throughout the course of a year, they might catch like 6 or 7 like large fish. And I'm talking, you know, large, I mean 27 inches and up. You know, they'll catch a bunch of fish that are in that size class. And it's simply for the fact that the fish don't forget what a nymph is. And they feed on them. And, you know, the old world record in Arkansas, I'll never forget when Davey told me this, when they cut the stomach of the fish open, they found that it was something like 99.8% sow bugs were its diet.
Yeah.
And then there was a tiny piece of the pie chart was other.
Yeah.
And that river, I don't know if you know this, Roger, but they stocked that river with almost 3 million rainbow trout, and they're around 8 inches. So the White River. So if big fish were really, you know, if there was really like some kind of like correlation between big fish and big food, you know, don't you think that fish would have had a higher concentration of, you know, fish remains in its stomach?
Yeah.
And then the other one, this person, Dylan, that I met, he works at a fly shop in, you know, British Columbia. He was like, yeah, you know, big fish, you know, they feed on big food items, you know, which we'll agree, but they have to snack.
Mm-hmm.
So think about us, right? We have breakfast, right? And then what do? Like if there's potato chips there or like, you know, like there's like, you know, for me it's like, you know, like cinnamon bears. I'll snack. And I might have 10 of them. So you get lucky because big fish eat food at big food items, but they snack too. So you catch them when they're snacking up.
Yeah. Yeah, the other aspect of it is it's one thing to hook them up, and it's another one to land them, too.
I mean.
You know, when I was over on the Gunnison, I knew where a large fish was. The first day I hooked up with him, and I could just tell. I mean, it was a big fish. And then I found out later one of the people that won a trip off of our show over there with Jason Booth on the Gunnison caught a fish in that area, and it was like a 26-inch rainbow. I knew I had hooked up with him that one day, and he broke me off, and I figured, okay, he's done today. I'm not going to get him on the hook again. So I went back the next day, hooked up, saw him come up river and porpoise with me, but he knew more about what he was doing than I was because I couldn't bring in the line to get it taut enough because he was coming right up river at me, and I lost him. So I know that fish is still there, and it's a matter of I've got to be more skillful than he is to finally get him to the shore. But there's a lot of things that have to go right with a big fish, right, Aaron? I mean, not just one
thing. You know. Well, the one thing, you know, I tell people is when you hook a big fish, like, don't get too excited. You know, but barring a tree in the middle of the river, you know, that the fish would go underneath, you have a very good chance of getting them. And, like, you know, if I could offer someone one piece of advice to landing a big trout, don't let it get too far away from you.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing worse than when you see a guy hook a big fish and he just stands there, like, smiling and the line's getting ripped off his reel. And the next thing you know, he's got 100 feet of line out.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Hook the fish, wow, that's a big one, and then get the line tight, and if it goes downstream, walk downstream, you know? And I try to keep the distance to, like, probably 25 feet or less. It's almost like you're walking a dog. And then eventually, you know, like, you get them to within 25 feet, takes a run 40 feet, and then you get them 20 feet, then the next run might be 15 feet, and then you bring them back in 15, you know? And every time its fish takes a run or lunges, you know, it loses energy. So eventually you cut that distance down and, you know, next thing you know, the fish is in your net. So, you know, like the big thing really is to keep the fish close. Don't let them get too far away from you. Just keep them close, keep calm, and, you know, and get a big net. So I tell people, you know, none of these little, you know, inches, you know, nets that have like a foot long, you know, opening. Because you never know when you're going to, you know, a big fish. I remember one guy was like, oh, that net's obnoxious. I'm like, okay. But hey, you know what? I'd rather be overprepared than underprepared.
There you go. All right, we got to wind things up here. Aaron, stick with me till the end here. We're going to give away a few prizes. And the first thing that we're going to give away here is a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. Now, if you don't win tonight, go out to fedflyfishers.org, check them out, see what they're doing out there, because it's a great, great organization to support. So our winner for that drawing is Craig, Craig Myers. Craig Myers. So congratulations, Craig. Craig's in Oregon. So, Craig, I will send you an email, I'll get your information, and get you started with the Federation. So congratulations. Second prize we have is a one-year subscription to Fly Fishing and Tying Journal from Amato Books. So if you're not familiar with Amato, go out to amatobooks.com, see the periodicals they have, the books they have, all kinds of things on fly fishing. And our winner there is Stephen Bodenstab, Stephen Bodenstab in Illinois. So, Stephen, congratulations. Get yourself a one-year subscription to that. Now, lastly, we're going to give away a $25 gift certificate to Front Range Angler in Boulder, Colorado. Again, you can go in the store if you're out in Colorado, or you can go on their website and redeem it that way. I just had to laugh because somebody just wrote in here, Aaron, aren't you concerned that it will be crowded after this show? Well, we don't have that many people on the show, and not that many people take action. And a lot more people will be going to the Bighorn than the Madison. So I really worry about it too much.
Well, what you know, I'd like to address that actually. That's
Okay. Quickly.
actually quite awesome. And people like to be combative, so you know, here, I'll throw one right back at you. You know, I mean, wouldn't you rather have the people distributed over a larger period, over a larger area than just concentrated in five spots? So you can actually maybe think about it in reverse and say, wow, you know, if there's some people going here, maybe I can go to this spot. But, you know, people don't think, they just like to react. So, you know, I'll just use that as like, you know, like he has, you know, it's human nature and it is what it is. But no.
It's a scarcity mentality, and it's I agree with you. There's so many other places. If there's 20 people fishing here, go somewhere else, you know? Go somewhere else. Enjoy yourself.
And we just spoke about, I don't know, 300 miles of trout streams, and I didn't mention a pot. So,
Yeah, a lot of
yeah.
a lot of
So, better question next time.
Okay, no, we love all the questions, and that's how we learn, and so forth. So, last question out there, okay, if you want to win this $25 gift certificate, is I'll make this really easy tonight. What town was our center point tonight for all our travels for, you know, staying away from the crowds? What was the town that we were working from all night tonight? Put it in. Let's see if we get your gift certificate. Okay. They're madly typing now. See, what's wrong with that? Lincoln? No, it wasn't Lincoln I'm thinking of. Phillipsburg? That would be it. Phillipsburg, right?
That's it. Yep,
Okay,
that's
Bruce, St. Paul,
100%.
Minnesota. just got yourself a $25 gift certificate, Front Range Anglers. So, Bruce, go ahead and send me over your address in the same box you just answered the question in. And I've got your email address. Also, give me your last name as well. So, first, last name, address, and then we'll be good to go. We'll get that over to Front Range, and they'll send you out a certificate. So, thanks for playing. Thanks, everybody, for being with us tonight. I appreciate that, and especially you, Aaron, for sharing your knowledge again. And, geez, we might convert you from a Jersey boy to a Rocky Mountain boy, huh? It's always going to be that Jersey blood in you, though.
It's week to week, you know. Yeah. It's week to week.
Week to week, okay. Well, thanks for being with us again. I appreciate all your time and your expertise. I really
No, thank you. You're welcome, Roger, anytime.
Okay. Our next broadcast will be on November 16th. We're going to skip a couple weeks here because Roger's going to Belize to go fishing. So I'm looking forward to that. You wouldn't believe it. So our next show will be an interview with Pudge Kleinkopf, and our topic for the show will be moving from rookie to novice to pro. Pudge Kleinkopf is a professional guide in Alaska and has answered hundreds of questions over the year and throughout her career, helping rookies move on up to the ladder and becoming a novice and a pro. So join us to get your questions answered and see how you might move from that rookie status to somewhere to novice or pro and improve your fishing skills. And we're always doing that throughout our life. So join us and get your questions answered. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Amato Books, Watermaster, Flats Time Charters, and Keeney's Fly Shop for sponsoring your show tonight. And don't forget, visit our website, askaboutflyfishing.com. Make sure you're signed up to receive the announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing on the radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.